How's it going, and welcome to episode 32 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings, who of course can and should be followed on the Twitter at HastingKevin. Make sure to follow up this episode by reading Kevin's weekly Fab recommendation article over at pitcherlist.com, which comes out every Sunday afternoon. Kevin, hey man, just how's it going?
It's going great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm, you know, talking to you guys before the before recording the first round of my home league dynasty head-to-head playoffs. I am glad that the playoffs started this week and we don't push it all the way to the end, but it is, I didn't get a bye. Six teams make the playoffs. So it is, every pitch is stressful no matter how good you think your team is. So that's the only thing on my mind right now as this league has been going on since 2001. And so it is, it's on my mind most Septembers. So hopefully I'll stay focused and we can get through this episode with some really good information. But if I start to wander, you'll know why.
yeah. Checking the box scores. I know what's going on.
All right. Luckily, I'll be able to take a little bit off of my shoulders as we have a great guest with us this week to help with the Fab recommendations. John Metzeler will help us figure out the best use of our final remaining Fab dollars in September. John can and should be followed on the Twitter at John Metzeler. And you can check for a link to that in our show description. His weekly hitter list article comes out on pitcherlist.com every Wednesday, where he breaks down the top 150 hitters across baseball every week. I'm looking forward to getting his take on exactly how he comes up with that and what he looks for in a hitter when considering his weekly list. But for now, John, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
It's going great. I think it's probably going better for me than it is for you with Josiah Gray's recent implosion. But yeah, things are going good. I appreciate you guys having me on. Back when Pitcherless still only had 4 podcasts, I had achieved podcast bingo. Now that it has 20, I don't know if I'll ever get there again, but I'm slowly working my way there thanks to the invitation from you guys. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
That's not a bad idea. Like, we should have a little bingo card with the 15 to 20 podcasts and have everybody and when print you achieve it out at home, and you can get a little stamp every time you are a little punch card. And see if you can get 5 in a row. That'd be fun.
Yeah. And if you fill it up, you replace Nick as CEO of Pitcherless.
That's official.
Fair reward.
That's the only way to do it. Go big or go home, I guess.
I don't think I want that job.
Yeah, it
Kevin
might be more of a punishment.
Not be going on any podcast. Yeah. All right, let's get right into it then. We'll get into our news section here. And of course, we try to talk about news that happened throughout the course of the week that may affect how you're looking at your Fab considerations. Kevin, I'll start with you. The Marlins placed Jesus Aguilar on the IL with left knee inflammation, and they called up Lewin Diaz to take his place. Diaz started at first base since getting the call every day. And has, of course, has some prospect pedigree behind him. Should there be any interest in Diaz for the rest of the way, assuming he stays up in Miami through the rest of the month?
I think so. If you're looking for a little bit of power, it's been a few days since he hit a home run, but he had a nice stretch there where he had 3 home runs in 8 games. Unfortunately, he's on a horrible hitless streak prior to yesterday, but he came out of it a little bit with a couple of hits. It's the time of year we're looking for playing time. We're looking for opportunity. And it's with these 3 games back since the Aguilar injury, it looks like he's going to have that opportunity. And maybe he came out of the hitless streak he had towards the end of August. And now and the first couple of games back. And it's all about plate appearances right now. And he's going to get them. So he's definitely worth a look depending on the depth of your league.
Yeah, Lewin Diaz is a pretty interesting guy. Like, he has the profile of somebody who could potentially hit for a high average. But then when you like look at his minor league track, that average hasn't really been super consistent. And it seems like that where he gets a lot of his power from is hitting too many fly balls, which, I mean, too many is obviously relative. Like, it's probably where he gets that that power from, but I don't really recall too many prospects having the problem of hitting too many fly balls. I think of Vlad Guerrero Jr. and like Jaren Duran prior to this year as just being guys who the knock against them has always been they can't get the ball off the ground enough. So it's interesting to see a guy who does the inverse. But yeah, to Kevin's point, like at this point in the year, you're just looking for that steady plate appearance pipeline. So yeah, I think he'll be an interesting guy to keep an eye on, especially as you track his performance heading into next year.
All right, John, another prospect made his MLB debut. Seth Beer made his debut for Arizona in one of the best ways you possibly can. Pinch hit home run on Friday and went on to record his first MLB start on Saturday, starting at first base and hitting out of the seventh spot for the D-backs in their lineup. So I'm curious, what as the hitter guru, what are your expectations for him for the final 3 weeks of the season?
I just want to say, I hope that there's an Arizona newspaper that used the headline "Beer in a Shot" after that home run last night. It's just like sitting right there for the taking. And I think I'm most excited with Beer for all of the fantasy team name possibilities that are going to be opened up next season, especially if Jake Berger is good. You could have like Berger and a beer. Yeah. There's just so many possibilities.
There we go.
Yeah. Beer had a really impressive showing in the minors this year. It was hard to know what to expect from a lot of prospects just because we didn't have any data from 2020 to go off of. But he really hit the ground running this year. / 287, 398, 511 with 16 home runs over just 100 games. And going through the scouting reports with him, he's pegged as a guy who has like decent power, pretty good plate discipline. So I think he's probably more of an asset in OBP leagues. And I think long-term, he probably might struggle to hit for a super high average, but I think that he's a guy who could have a pretty solid low floor or high enough floor that he could be like a really solid asset, maybe give you like a 270 average over a full season with maybe like 25 home runs and decent amount of counting stats if he can get the playing time. So yeah, I picked him up in my 16-team OBP league because he just seems like a great fit there. And I'm hoping the Diamondbacks give him good playing time, run rest of season, so I can extract as much value as possible out of him.
Yeah, he seems like the type that, why call him up? There's still a minor league season. You could continue to get reps down there. Why call him up if you're not going to give him everyday run, especially on a team like Arizona, which obviously has nothing to play for except to see what their future could possibly look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's interesting. The farm system of the Diamondbacks isn't super deep. And this is a year where everything's gone wrong for them. So yeah, I don't think there's much to lose in giving him a look.
All right, moving on to a pitcher that's making his, not debut, but his return. Ross Stripling is back from the IL for the Jays and came in relief for Hyunjin Ryu in the first game of the Jays doubleheader on Saturday. So Kevin, I'll ask you, do you have any interest in Stripling now that he's back off the IL?
Well, today was interesting. My guess is he wasn't expecting to have to relieve Ryu, giving up 7 earned runs in 3 1/3. He was probably thinking he'd come in the second game with Hatch starting tonight, being Saturday evening as we're recording. Prior to today, it is really interesting to me that Stripling has been awesome when not facing the Red Sox. He's given up 16 earned runs in 9 2/3 against the Red Sox prior to today. Take those out and it's 83 2/3 inning pitch with 82 strikeouts and a 3.12 ERA. So I don't know how much stock to put into this evening, but going forward, I'm not so sure he was going to automatically get a spot back in the rotation anyway. They have Mats tomorrow, then Manoa, Berríos, Robbie Ray. They have an off day, and they're back to Ryu. So with that off day, these guys are going on 5 days rest with a 5-man rotation. So I'm not really sure what Stripling is going to contribute. He may be one of these guys that we talk about later in the show that might get multiple inning relief role going forward. But as a starting pitcher, yeah, I don't think I'm interested this week. Keep an eye on him. If you really need some depth that you don't have, I guess he's an option, but I really don't have much interest here.
Yeah, with besides Ryu's start today, the one thing that Toronto's rotation definitely has on their side is they've got a couple of workhorses at the top of that rotation. Guys that are going, they're not getting pulled after four. They're, you know, not getting pulled after five unless they're having some kind of blow up. And so there's, I don't see there being a ton of opportunity to kind of garner wins from their relief corps by coming in as like a follower or even as a, you know, pseudo follower coming in the fourth inning or something like that. I echo that as well. I do see Stripling being more of a multi-inning guy. When they brought Pearson back up, Nate Pearson back up, he was pretty much put into that similar role as well. Got some late inning garbage time, if you will, as well in some kind of blow up games. But I think Stripling could probably fill that same kind of role pending any kind of injury. And they don't really have a lot of guys they need. Manoa maybe aside, they don't really have a lot of guys that they need to like rest as well. They don't have a lot of young guys. I mean, between Ray and Ryu and what have you, they don't have guys that they need to rest or they need to skip a start or play Dodger with or anything like that either. And they're fighting to get that wild card spot. So they really can't afford to play games like that.
The only thing I'd keep an eye on is it wouldn't surprise me if Ryu may have some sort of injury we haven't heard about yet. That's the third time in seven starts he's given up seven earned runs.
Unfortunately, we will move on to an actual injury. John, Wander Franco left Friday's game early with hamstring tightness, but not before extending his on-base streak one more game, which was nice. Of course, Tampa Bay's rookie has quickly become the everyday shortstop for the Rays. So after getting placed on the IL, who do you like to get the bulk of playing time at short or anywhere else on the field for that matter? And is that situation worth your time with Fab this coming Sunday?
Yeah, I would like the record to show that I had Taylor Walls as the replacement. It's now happened. He was in the starting lineup today as shortstop, but I predicted it before it happened. So I would just like credit for that. Walls was the boring option. I thought there were three possibilities here. I thought potentially they could call up Vidal Brujan again, just because he had seven games at shortstop in AAA. I know it's not a ton, but they have been trying to get him into a more versatile role. And there was a ton of excitement about Brujan prior to his call-up and the disappointing output that he had when he was with the team. But the more boring alternatives were Taylor Walls, who the Rays love for his defense. He's like a defensive whiz. I think they value him pretty highly there. He has really polished plate discipline. I think he has a 12% walk rate this year, which is actually really impressive for a rookie. And he can steal a few bases. He has like gap power, so he can get some extra base hits. Like, he's not a complete zero. I don't know if there's a ton of value to reap there. I don't think he's really probably worth a pickup unless you're in an insanely deep league or an OBP maybe. Like, he could potentially post a solid OBP rest of the season, but for the most part, I think I'm probably shying away. But the other option is maybe they slide Joey Wendell over to shortstop. He can fill the void for a little bit. But yeah, unfortunately, I think the Rays are not going to give us something to get excited about and use Brujan in that spot.
Yeah, I do wonder if, I think there's a lot of speculation on whether or not Josh Lowe would be not long for the Tampa roster after the weekend. But I was wondering if this injury just opens up a roster spot in, even if it's just on the bench and keeps Lowe up in Tampa for the remainder, at least the remainder of the time that Franco is on the IL. We'll wait and see on that probably later on next week. All right, Kevin, we'll stay with the Rays. They also placed starter Shane McClanahan on the IL, opening up a rotation spot for at least a week or so. And it looks like it will allow Chris Archer to stick in the rotation as he continues to stretch himself out after returning from his elongated time in the IL. He did start today, Saturday. Is Archer in a place that you trust to plug him into your starting rosters for the last few weeks, or is there someone else in Tampa worth watching for the extra innings that McClanahan is leaving on the table?
This is funny because my notes prior to our discussion, right before we started recording tonight, the first thing I said was here is not sure he's healthy. And I wanted to see how he performed tonight. And after tonight, leaving after four innings, and the only word is hip discomfort, we still don't know if he's healthy. So, and he only threw 55 pitches his tonight in those four innings. It was a pretty nice outing. One walk, two hits, only two strikeouts, one earned run. Not bad. He did the same thing in his first game back, only two innings. They were a nice two innings against the White Sox, I believe. I was driving and listening to that game on the radio. Pretty impressive outing, but after two innings, he didn't come back for the third. So we still don't know. I think I'm surprised at Drew Rasmussen only being 39% rostered in TGFBI. I think he's the guy here. 8 earned runs in 44 innings pitched. That's a 1.64 ERA on the season. And his last 5 appearances have all been starts. Now he's only went 4 innings in 3 of them and 5 in the other 2. So we may not be looking at a great possibility of wins here. But in those starts, he's thrown the same 1.64 ERA in those 22 innings pitched. So he's the guy I'm more interested here in the Tampa rotation. Just not certain he's going to pitch enough innings to qualify for wins. Also, the strikeout rate has come down as a starter, as we would expect. He was getting more strikeouts when he was getting his appearances as a reliever. But he's the guy I'm looking at here, not Chris Archer.
I think you also going to keep your eye on, as we talk about a lot throughout the course of the years, Colin McHugh. Probably getting a couple extra appearances with the rotation. Not shambles per se in Tampa, but definitely hurting a little bit. I was surprised to see he did not pitch today. He's had a bunch of days off. I'm expecting him to make an appearance on Sunday as you're listening to this. So
they're saving him for those 4 inning Drew Rasmussen appearances.
There you go. All right. Again, we will stay in Tampa, John. Nick Anderson is close to returning for the Rays. Do you think he's worth a look if you're desperate for saves, or do you just expect his appearance in their bullpen to muddy the Tampa Bay bullpen waters even more so than it already has?
Yeah, I picked up Nick Anderson after a ton of my drafts this year thinking, oh, he'll be back in midseason. And I'm like super cute for getting this closer for free. And that was just obviously misguided for several reasons, one of which is that the Rays just do not tend to stick with one closer for an extended period of time. Kittredge has been getting most of the save ops lately, but over the past 2 weeks alone, they've had save opportunities for Enns, Mazza, Fleming, and McHugh. I think trying to pin down what's going to happen with that closer situation there is like a fool's errand. And I just don't really see them thrusting Anderson back into that role automatically anyway. So even if it is something where they want to see if he's healthy before giving him the majority of save opportunities, I think that'll probably take at least another week, 2 weeks to happen. And at that point, you're just getting the final week's worth of save opportunities anyway. So if you're desperate, I could see maybe throwing a few dollars at him. But for the most part, I just don't really see too many opportunities coming his way rest of the season.
I'd be curious to see who gets the first save opportunity between him and David Robertson, who the Rays just brought back up somewhat recently and who's been looking pretty good overall. So good for both of them as they make their returns.
Yeah, the Rays are a headache for people who play fantasy, but they just create so much content for podcasts. There's never a shortage of things to discuss.
That's true. All right, speaking of content that we talk about on a regular basis, this podcast, Kevin, this is our Minnesota Weekly Pitcher Injury Report. Randy Dobnak back to the IL for the Twins, who then called back up Andrew Albers to join the club in Minnesota. What are your thoughts on Albers' streaming option for the remainder of the season for the Twins?
I have zero interest. 6 right. home runs in his last 7 innings pitched. And this has typically been the answer throughout the season when we talk about the Twins pitching staff. And Pineda's back and had a nice 5 inning outing this evening against the Royals. And then they have Ober Gant, who has actually been pretty productive since coming over from the Cardinals. And then they do have that doubleheader on, what will that be? I believe Tuesday. So that's probably where they're looking to use Albers here. And then they have Jax. They have an off day Thursday and an off day the following Monday. So I don't see a lot of opportunity for Albers in the first place. also, he had a nice couple of outings when he first came up. And then the last two, he's just got shelled. Makes me wonder if he's tipping pitches or somebody figured something out watching video on him.
Mm-hmm. All right, that was enough Minnesota injury talk for one show. Maybe we'll circle back in a different segment. So let's move on to another unfortunate injury. I guess you can call it an injury. John, Chris Sale was entered the COVID IL sweepstakes. That is the Boston Red Sox roster. So curious to know who's left to fill in for the Boston rotation. And are you more interested in the starter or starters that might fill in or the long relievers options that Boston might be able to throw out there?
Yeah, again, I wish we had recorded yesterday because I could have looked like a genius. I thought they were going to call up Connor Siebold, who ended up getting today's start. And he didn't go very long in today's game. He pitched three innings, I believe, gave up, I think, three hits and two walks and a couple runs. It wasn't a super long start. It's tough to really get a gauge on what we can expect from him going forward. But he was building his pitch count up through August. He seems to be one of the Red Sox more polished arms in their systems that they could throw in there to fill in for Sale. Fangraphs mentions his fastball sits like 91 to 94. He's got like a plus changeup. Solid 367 ERA this year in AAA. Just doesn't seem like a high upside arm necessarily. I think he's a guy who could potentially at least eat some innings for them while they're waiting for Pivetta and Martin Perez and a lot of these other guys to work their way back. But yeah, I don't think there's a ton of interest there, especially given that it just doesn't seem like he's stretched out enough to give you those quality innings. If you're going to rely on the bullpen, and it seems like they are going to probably go with the bullpen game at least one time through the rotation, you could look at a guy like Whitlock. Garrett Richards has actually been super solid since they moved him to the pen over in Boston. So he's another guy who might be able to give them a couple innings during their bullpen days. Those are some names to look out for, but nothing I don't think has super high upside that is really worth your time.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to follow up on the topic of Chris Sale. We got a question via Twitter regarding some other injured pitchers, and namely Jacob DeGrom, whose 2021 season is still a bit murky, and Luis Severino, who also has no guarantee to make an appearance in September. So the question really revolves around whether or not, who would you choose to drop in a league that has IL spots? Who do you drop between DeGrom and Severino to hold on to Sale in your to move Sale into one of those IL spots? And or are you worried about any of them?
I'm letting Severino go first. Now, while he did begin some mound work this week, and DeGrom has yet to throw off a mound, although I think he's throwing at 120 feet. Long toss. If we see Severino in September, it will be as a reliever. And I took the question to pertain to these guys as starters. So even if we do see Severino, he's probably a reliever. Now, we may not see DeGrom either. So in reality, right now, the way he worded the question, I am dropping Severino so I can place Sale in my IL and pick up another player. As soon as I want another player, I'm dropping DeGrom too. I'm not counting on him coming back. We only have 3 weeks. Yeah, he may get a start, but I can't count on it. So Severino first and probably DeGrom as well very shortly.
Yeah, I will say the Mets front office says that DeGrom's ligament is perfectly healthy and he could probably throw a perfect game at a moment's notice. So something to keep in the back of your heads when you're weighing roster decisions when it comes to DeGrom. But yeah, I totally agree with Kevin. I think you're really running out of time for these guys to ramp up and give you meaningful innings. I'd be okay dropping either of them.
Hey, I made jokes in my head when you reminded me of that, about how it magically appeared that everything's fine. It healed itself, as I think the quote was. But at the same time, I think we all made, quote, not jokes, but we were all questioning whether or not Tatis Jr.'s shoulder would be fine. All of a sudden, he was back on the field and you're like, oh, and obviously doing MVP quality things on the baseball field.
Right.
So maybe the Mets have that same magic pixie dust that the Padres did with Tatis. Who knows?
Yeah, I feel like they should give these guys some adamantium skeletons at this point. There's some clear Wolverine powers going on here.
All right, that's going to do it for our news section of the pod. As always, we try to keep it focused to news that might affect your FAB considerations this Sunday. And we may have left out some other important items worth knowing. To stay up to date with all the news and notes, you should be listening to the Daily First Pitch podcast hosted by Nick Pollock during the week and Alex Fast with Fast Pitch on the weekends. It's 15 minutes full of the most important things that happen in baseball the day before and is a must listen every day to stay up to date with what's going on across the league, including bullpen adjustments, big time hitter performances, and of course, starting pitching spotlights. Speaking of spotlights, let's move on to our focus topic. And because we do have the hitter list himself here with us today, John, I'm going to talk to you about basically how I want you to let our listeners know, and honestly myself, how it is that you not only do this every week, but how you continue to do it every week throughout the entire season, breaking down the top, what is the top 150 hitters for the remainder of the season at that time of the list, at that time in the season. And so talk to me a little bit about what the things that you're looking for, your overall process, and as readers are looking over your list, what are they, how they should be analyzing your analysis as far as your valuations of these hitters, and then you throw in what is literally the most difficult part of what you do.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you guys are giving me a platform to talk about this. I actually considered writing an article about how hard it is to do rankings on a weekly basis.
Out on my couch. This is
yes, this is as much therapy for me as it is information for your listeners. But yeah, it's rankings are no joke. I was going to write that article, and then I stopped and thought to myself, who actually cares? Because
we do. We do.
To be honest, most people should, only because if you're looking at rankings, you're not looking at them blindly. You want to know that the person who's putting these rankings together, either A, knows what they're talking about, and right. B, has a process. Like they're not just throwing names up at a wall and hoping they stick, or looking at like ADP and being like, oh, I'm just going to copy these and maybe I'll switch them around a little bit to make myself look cute. Like they want to know that you have a process that's involved and you're continuously adapting and working at it. So I think
absolutely. You
know, they should want to listen and read that kind of an article, but you can go ahead and verbalize it instead.
So really it transforms over the course of the year. Obviously when the season starting off, you're really creating projections for a lot of these players in your mind and trying to get a sense of what you reasonably can expect from them rest of the season. And then you're squaring that with what they're actually doing in season as the season progresses. So as the season goes on, I will take my rankings each week. I'll sit down and I'll literally go through each and every player and look at their performance over the last week, over the last 15 days, over the last 30 days. And if there's anything that stands out, if they're slumping horribly over the last month or so, or they're hitting tons of home runs over the last 15 days, if anything stands out there, usually what I'll then do is dig in on their Savant page and try to get a sense of, is there an approach change here? Are they swinging at more pitches in the zone? Are they pulling the ball more? I'll start to do like deep dives on these guys that are showing skills that are either not matching up with what I expected in the good way or the bad way. So that takes a couple hours every week, is just going through 150 guys and getting a sense of what they've been doing lately, and then digging deeper on guys where the performance has some red flags, you know, or green flags. And then once I've done all of that, what I'll then do is I'll go to the splits leaderboard on FanGraphs, pull up stats from the last week, and that'll give me a sense who has the top 20 wOBAs over the last week, who has the top 20 wOBAs over the last 30 days, who's hit 5 home runs this week. That also helps me to highlight some guys who are maybe in the midst of breaking out, or names that I haven't been aware of just from trying to keep track of the performance of guys throughout the year. So yeah, it's very involved. How I do it is lots of drugs and a short-term memory, because it can definitely get to you committing as much time as you do to these rankings. And it's definitely helped me admire, especially what guys like Nick and Rick Graham and Andy Patton do, because a lot of times when you're doing rankings, you're comparing things that are hard to compare, especially with hitter rankings. Like, how do you square up the value of a guy who hits 25 home runs with a guy who hits 10 home runs and steals 15 bases? Like, you're really comparing two things that are hard to really value, and then trying to square that with where they should go in the rankings. So yeah, it's a very involved process. And I'll say, as the year starts to draw to a close, then it starts to be a lot more about recent performance. So over the last few weeks on Hitter List, it's been a lot of like guys who are just absolutely raking right now. Maybe in the beginning of the year, I never would have considered dropping Yoan Moncada for Austin Hayes. We have 3 weeks left and literally anything can happen. Frank Schwindel can outperform Juan Soto in 3 weeks. Like, it's, we're in the Wild West now. As the season progresses, the list morphs into this other thing, which is trying to recommend guys who seem to be locked in and could give you some decent stats as the season winds down.
It's interesting to me because there really aren't many lists like yours out there. And I think that I get the majority of people utilize maybe player raters, like maybe the Razzball player rater or auction calculators as of right now in the season. But the fact that you're taking into account what you think they're also going to do in the coming weeks or months, depending on where you are in the season, makes your list that much more interesting, because we always say this, is you shouldn't be paying for things that have already happened. You should only be looking at things that you think will happen or possibly could happen. So I think that's what makes your list that much more valuable and effective, as far as you can look at a player read and be like, all right, this guy's earned $40 worth of auction value so far this season, but there's no guarantee that's what he's going to be doing for the remainder of the season, no matter what part of the season you're in.
And that's like the difference between the leaderboard and rankings, right? Like, leaderboard is really just giving you the raw data of what happened, and that's super useful in its own way. If you trust the person who's doing the rankings, that can hopefully give you some insight into what to expect in the future, because it does allow you to factor in things like, if you believe in the idea of someone being injury prone, that aspect of it, lineup spot, changes in lineup spot, changes in team composition, rest of season schedule. Like, these are all these little things that can change how you evaluate players, and are really hard, I think, to account for in a leaderboard, or something like that. Yeah, I appreciate you guys letting me get that off my chest. I feel like a giant weight has been lifted.
Nice.
That's awesome. All right. I have questions.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions about this. As somebody who likes to start drafting for next season before the ALCS and NLCS even start for this season, how much of your last couple of months of this year's hitter list would you take into account for drafting for next season?
Yeah, I would throw the current iterations of the list probably out the window.
Throw September out with the call-ups?
Yeah, because like I mentioned, that you're factoring in hot performances, like guys like Ian Happ or Frank Schwindel or Bobby Dalbec, Austin Hayes. Like, these are guys that just come to mind who have been absolutely raking lately. And they're probably a little higher in the list now than they would be at the start of next season, just because you're trying to grab the hot hand. The rankings are meant to be for like head-to-head leagues, where especially those are leagues where that are especially geared towards streaming of both pitchers and hitters, because sometimes you'll have a guy, especially in a 12-team format where it's like relatively shallow, you can drop a guy who hasn't been cutting it for you. For example, in the staff league, guy picked up Austin Hayes. He's been killing it for me this week, but he's not necessarily a guy that you would bank on producing for you at the start of next year. So yeah, I would probably lean more on the list for rest of season this year. And then usually what I'll do at the end of the year is I'll write a way too early ranking of 2022 players, and that'll just reset everything and hopefully give people a sense of where guys will fall prior to next season.
One other question. What couple of players made the biggest jump up and down throughout the season? And not like the hot players you just referred to, but due to steady performance. Who did you notice moved up the most and moved down the most?
That's a great question. I was pretty high on Winker coming into the year, but I didn't really anticipate him taking it to this level. Like, he had a period in 2020 where I think he was posting an ex-woba of 500 for a month. And that keyed me into the fact that I think he had figured something out. He ended up getting a back injury last year, which ended up sapping his output. And then, of course, people saw that and thought, oh, this is the same old Jesse Winker. But he was a guy who definitely rose up. Ohtani, actually, he was coming off an absolutely horrible 2020 season. So I don't think people were expecting much from him entering the year. And yeah, he just shot up the rankings. He is in the top tier for me and has been for a while now, obviously, because he's just been such a monster. Matt Olson made some big improvements this year, so he shot up there pretty quick. Yeah, there have been a couple of guys who have been pretty steady risers all year. Marcus Semien, another guy who I don't think too many people expected this from entering the season. So yeah, there's just been a lot of surprising names. And I think that's generally true of fantasy baseball. I think we forget how unpredictable it is and how quickly guys who we might not have had a ton of interest in can turn into elite bats within a given season.
Awesome.
Yeah, like I said, the list is really it's really invaluable especially when it comes to this time of year. Just, we talk about it all the time, about anybody is droppable. We've been saying that probably since mid-August, at least. When you get to a point where your first round pick, you've got everything you can out of them at that point. Like, you should not feel bad about dropping Cody Bellinger when he's playing the way he's playing.
Oh, so, don't say that. There's 3 weeks left. He can still turn it all around. A 20 home run stretch, it'll pull him right back up to where we thought he would
be. With AJ Pollock going down, there's more opportunity for him. And hopefully that volume turns into something positive and it doesn't just weigh you down even further.
Right.
All right. Let's talking about those kind of recommendations from your list, John. Let's go right into our recommendations for Fab. We, of course, break it down by category of what you might be looking for to make that stretch run. There's in the last 3 weeks of the season. And you're going to be looking, at this point, you're looking at very specific categories, especially in your roto leagues. But you also need to understand what in head-to-head leagues, what categories you really don't have a chance to win. And maybe these are the opportunity to just put the ones that, like, hey, you're not going to win stolen bases against this other opponent. Put those to the wayside and really just focus on your power, for an example. So let's start with power. And Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Who's out there in multiple different types of leagues that you might be looking at this weekend for a power boost?
Yeah, Austin Hayes that John mentioned. He's universally rostered in 15 teamers, but he's available in a lot of shallower leagues, only 24% rostered on Yahoo. Andrew Benintendi is hitting in the four spot for the Kansas City Royals now. And over the last couple of weeks has 3 home runs with 14 RBI while hitting over 300. Shallower leagues, Darren Ruff out in San Francisco. We know what San Francisco does shuffling these guys in lineups. It's really hard to put them in a weekly lineup, but San Francisco has 7 games this week. That helps. Even the games these guys don't start, they do get their pinch hitting appearances. And Jordan Luplow in Tampa has shown some power that he hasn't shown in the past. So this may just be a flash, but in deep leagues, he's available and he's hit 3 home runs in the last 7 games, much like San Francisco, and probably the other way around. San Francisco is playing much like Tampa does in this regard, but Tampa has 7 games this coming week as well. So there's some options for a few home runs and RBIs there.
Nice. Always good to have a lot of different options in these categories, especially when you have such few fab dollars to go around, so you can make plenty of contingency bids. So, John, give us a couple more that you have an eye on, again, regardless of format, and we'll talk about where these players are available and where they're not available. But as we always say, check. Always check your wire. We could say that they're 99% rostered, and you could be that 1% league that still has them on the wire. Always check. John, who you have your eye on for this week?
Yeah, Adam and Kevin have actually summoned me to yell at you all for not picking up Bobby Dalbec. He is somehow still rostered in just 37% of Yahoo leagues. I'm sure the percentage is much, much higher in NFBC. But yeah, the guy just continues to crush. I've been told there's been several previous guests who have talked him up a bit, but he's made some interesting changes over the past month or so. He's hitting 339. He hit 339 in August with 7 home runs while only playing semi-regularly, but he seems to have a pretty good hold on the first base job now. They work him in occasionally at third base, which is nice if you need some positional flexibility. And he's cut his K rate, which was sitting at 35% for his career, down to 25% since August 1st. And since he's done that, his expected batting average has actually hovered around 250, which is solid for a guy who I think could realistically, over a full season, potentially hit 35, 40 home runs. Like, he has that kind of power. He's got the fifth highest barrels per batted ball event in baseball among those with a minimum of 150 batted ball events. So this is a guy with like elite level power. He had really good plate discipline in the minors. So I'm getting like pre-2021 Matt Olson vibes from Dalbec. I think if this change is real, if that strikeout percentage can sit around 25%, I think that there is a breakout underway right now. And I think he could be a huge value in drafts next year. So yeah, again, I would definitely be getting on that bandwagon if you haven't yet. Patrick Wisdom is another interesting one. He's been in a horrible slump lately in terms of batting average. And I think that's probably what you can expect from him. But he's 44% rostered in Yahoo. He's prone to going on some pretty awful and magical streaks. Like, he has 9 home runs over the last month. But again, he's hit 183 during that time. So you're dealing with a feast or famine situation. But I think if you're in a league where you have a nice, especially Roto, you have a nice kind of padding in the batting average category, you can stomach a guy who goes over for a week straight if he then follows that up with a 6 home run week. So if you have a ground to gain in the home run category, Wisdom is an interesting guy to consider. In deeper leagues, DJ Peters, he's 4% rostered in Yahoo. He's been the Rangers cleanup hitter over the last few weeks. A poor man's Patrick Wisdom, which might make you want to throw up in your mouth a little bit, because he has a matching 35% whiff rate. He's got bad plate discipline, but still he's hit 9 home runs over the past month. I think he actually hit another one today, so that would be 10 over the last month. 12% barrel rate, so it squares with 35 home run power or so over the course of a season. So he's going to soak up a ton of counting stats. I think he's going to hit a bunch of home runs. Again, if you can stomach the batting average, I think that could be a nice option for folks out there. And then Yoshi Tsutsugo, who is the current right fielder for the Pirates, they've been swapping him between the number 2 spot and the cleanup spot in recent weeks, which I think is great for the counting stat perspective. Like, he's going to probably soak up a bunch of those, but hitting pretty well. Not the underlying power isn't quite as strong as some of the other guys that I've been recommending. You're probably looking at a guy with a true talent, 25 home runs over the course of a full season or so. He's hitting 288 with 7 homers over his last 30 games. So he's got the lineup spot. He's hitting pretty well right now. You don't really need too much over these last few weeks. Like, he can keep it up. You don't have to worry too much about regression, I don't think. So yeah, another one of those deeper league options that I think is probably worth your time.
Yeah, I'll definitely echo. I had my eye on DJ Peters for next week and beyond. If nothing else, we'll get to the schedule notes in a little bit, but Texas doesn't have an off day until the 27th. So they've got 2 straight weeks of 7 game slates ahead of them. So anybody available in Texas at least has the opportunity, especially like Peters, who plays every day, regardless of his strikeout rate, can have the opportunity to rack up those extra plate appearances and at-bats. All right, that's a ton of great names. Some of them are going to be a little bit more available in your shallower leagues like the Dalbec and Dalbec, really. Most of them, DJ Peters, available in 70% of main event leagues. Sorry, rostered in 70% of main event leagues, so 15-teamers, but available in 92% of online championships, so you're 12. So that's not just a Yahoo number, that 4% rostered that you mentioned. Patrick Wisdom is available, is rostered pretty much everywhere in your NFBC style leagues, whether they're 15 or 12s. So probably going to be more available in your CBS, ESPN, and Yahoo platforms, but always check. Tsutsugo, as you mentioned, 61% rostered in the main event and only 7% rostered in online championships, those 12 teamers. So a little bit more widely available there. So that could be a nice little conditional bid in addition to all the other names that we talked about. So let's move on to our speed section. Stolen bases, like saves, can be that, if you're in the middle of the pack, could be that opportunity to make a big jump in your standings if you just get a couple more. John, we'll start with you on the speed section. Who can add a couple extra stolen bases, if not also a few extra runs to your stat sheet?
Yeah, so one thing I mentioned a lot in Hitter List is I love old men because everybody wants to get in on like the new hotness. And there's like just these workhorses who can give you a surprising amount of production, and people just don't want anything to do with them for whatever reason. So Lorenzo Cain is a guy that I think is probably worth your attention. He's 24% rostered in Yahoo leagues. They've been shuffling him around the lineup pretty regularly, but he's been batting towards the bottom for the most part. So that might cut into like his run production. He's mostly been hitting in like the 7 to 9 spots, but he's got a solid grasp on at bats and the center field job. They've been working Jackie Bradley Jr. in on occasion, but for the most part, he's been getting a good play. He's 35, but he's still rocking 84th percentile sprint speed. And in 118 plate appearances since the break, he's racked up 7 stolen bases with just 1 caught stealing. And he's hit .274 with 4 home runs during that span. So he's not just this empty stolen base guy. I think he could potentially give you some decent production rest away in other categories as well. And he's got 2 stolen bases just this past week. So I think that's encouraging, especially when you consider that Cain missed a lot of time with lower half injuries this year. He's had hamstring and quad injuries that have eaten into his season. So seeing him running totally fine and getting his sprint speed up there, I think is huge for him. So I think he's definitely worth a look if he's available in your league. Leody Tavares, he's been talked about a bit, but Texas likes to run. They're fifth in baseball in stolen bases. So I think they're going to give him the green light for the most part when he gets on base, batting leadoff for them. He should have at least one opportunity every game to be on base without anyone ahead of him. And he hasn't been hitting that much better since his recall. I think his average is up to maybe 200 in the 55 plate appearances. But he does have 5 stolen bases during that span. He's shown a marked improvement in his strikeout rate since the beginning of the year, just at around 27% right now compared to 46% to begin the year. So I think there are potentially some nice changes. He had a home run today, so he's got a little bit of pop. He's not just an empty stolen bases option. And then 2 slightly deeper options, you got Yonny Hernandez, who's also in Texas. He's 2% rostered in Yahoo. Kind of bats towards the bottom of the lineup. Has been splitting some playing time with Culberson at third base, but they have been giving him some pretty good run there. Really impressive approach and contact profile. He's got an 11% whiff rate, 17% chase. Those are both about half of the league average, and then 90% zone contact rate. So when he swings the pitches in the zone, he can make contact. So I think he's going to be a solid option for probably batting average if he can keep that up. And then he's got 4 stolen bases over the last week. So that's 8 over his last 30 games. So yeah, again, Texas runs a lot. So I think that's a good option there. And then finally, Jorge Mateo, he's 3% rostered in Yahoo. Appears to be the Orioles starting shortstop at the moment. By sprint speed, he's the fourth fastest player in baseball, which is solid. Obviously, you're going to be looking for like opportunity with guys like Mateo. It's not just about pure sprint speed, but that's definitely a good place to start. It's got a decent amount of pop, sporting a 5.8% barrel rate this year. So that's pretty solid, especially considering that tends to stabilize around 50 batted ball events. So he's up at 230 now, so I think there is maybe double-digit pop in his bat over a full year. The only thing I think holding him back is that Baltimore typically doesn't run all that much. But you know what? He's stolen 5 bags since he got to Baltimore, which matches his total with the Padres in half the at-bats. I think given his natural ability to steal bases, I think they might actually give him run.
Yeah, I see Baltimore as one of those teams that we talked about this with the Yankees a lot, and they don't allow people to run if they don't think that they can run. Yeah. And it's more about personnel than it is about mentality or coaching mentality. I saw when Mateo came over from San Diego, I saw it as a very similar situation as when Jonathan Villar played with them, and they're just going to give him all the opportunity to do what he does because it's Baltimore and why not? But they let people run who can run. Look at Cedric Mullins is the perfect example. They just let Cedric Mullins do whatever he wants because he's earned it. But
opposed to Texas, who is letting like Nathaniel Lowe steal 10 bases, which just should not be happening.
Exactly. So, yeah. So we talked about Texas. A lot of these guys, Tavares, Hernandez, obviously there's going to be plenty of opportunity with the schedule coming up as well. Yonny Hernandez available in 37% of main event leagues and 84% of online championships. So readily available out there. Whereas Tavares, people caught on to him quickly after that nice little run he had recently. So not as available Tavares is at 98% rostered in the main event, but only 59% in online championships. So those in those 12 teamers who were still looking for a speed boost, he's probably out there as well. All right, Kevin, did John take all of the options, or do you have somebody else in your back pocket that we could talk about?
No, he actually did talk about the couple of guys I wanted to, but that's awesome. The two Texas Rangers, Tavares and Hernandez, is who I'm looking at here. It's interesting to me they flip-flopped in the batting order. Tavares has went to the top, Hernandez has went to the bottom, but Hernandez has a 352 OBP on the season, which we love to see out of our speed guys, and four stolen bases in the last five games. So moving to the bottom of the lineup may cost him a plate appearance every now and then, but shouldn't be too bad still like him. And Tavares, that's his fourth home run in the past couple weeks, and he's hitting 265. Like, all of a sudden, Tavares is a five-category contributor over the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, a couple of great choices there.
Yeah, Tavares, that was pretty much what he was doing after he got sent back down toward the beginning of the year in AAA. He's really just making up ground for, obviously, how he started the year in Texas, forcing that demotion. And so it's not entirely surprising to see him carry it over. It's just not it's not the name he made for himself at the end of last year. And of course, obviously not at the beginning of this year. So those not following him in AAA might have been a little surprised by those power numbers, but he's definitely made some strides at AAA to bring himself up to that five category option, like Kevin mentioned. All right, let's talk about some opportunity that some players might have moving forward. And before we do that, we'll of course talk about some schedule notes to keep an eye on when you are making your decisions for FAB when it comes to the number of at-bats you might see or some pitching matchups that are less than ideal. So there are a few teams that do have a seven-game slate this coming week: the Yankees, Tampa Bay, Houston, Texas, San Diego, San Francisco, and Minnesota have at least seven games. With Minnesota having seven games, despite having the off day on Thursday because they have a doubleheader against Cleveland on Tuesday. And then Cleveland gets six games because of the doubleheader, despite having two off days, Monday and Thursday. So you get a couple of extra at-bats for those players who end up playing in both of those games. There is only one team with a five-game slate this coming week, and that is the Milwaukee Brewers. So keep an eye on that. Again, Cleveland does have the two off days, but because of the doubleheader, you do see them with six games throughout the week. Colorado, as we always point out, is away all week, so they will be out of Denver. And obviously, as you look up WOBA leaderboards, you'll see that they're not nearly as good as they are at home. So definitely target that. They will have an off day on Monday, and then they have three games in Atlanta, followed by three games in Washington. So their little East Coast trip will be away from Denver. There are two National League teams heading to an American League stadium, so they'll gain the extra hitter in their lineup. Arizona has three at Houston over the weekend, while Milwaukee does have a two-game set in Detroit Tuesday and Wednesday. There are no AL teams this year that are going to lose their DH, as no AL teams are heading to a National League stadium. So don't have to worry about Stanton or anybody else losing their at-bats due to losing their spot in the lineup. So with those notes in mind, Kevin, are there any hitters out there that maybe didn't fit in specifically into power and speed, but just have a good opportunity ahead of themselves coming up this coming week?
Yeah, the guy I want to talk about, and John has him listed as well, but he's got a couple of others, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him up here. And he could have fit into either power or speed. He's been nice all around over the past couple of weeks, and the opportunity comes from the Nimmo injury, and that's Kevin Pillar. He was getting some pretty nice playing time anyway, but now he's in there every day. He's only 32% rostered in TGFBI. And single digits in Yahoo, 7%. Since this transition of him starting to play every day, just over the past few days, he's raised his batting average 15 points, his OBP 24 points, his slugging 46 points, hitting .333, four home runs, 11 RBI, eight runs, two stolen bases, another five-category contributor all of a sudden over the past couple weeks with this regular playing time. Mets are at home all week, 3 against St. Louis, 3 against Philadelphia. Be careful. You might not want to count on him the following week, as they do only have a 5-game schedule. So this may be a 1-week thing here, but definitely somebody I would be interested in using this week.
All right, John, that is one name off your list. Who else do you think has a good opportunity ahead of themselves?
Yeah, I will particularly recommend Kevin Pillar if you're in a hit-by-pitch league. I think that guy's been hit like 25 times this year. So yeah, he's a solid option in that kind of format. Yeah, some of the other names, one guy I wanted to recommend was Joe Adell. He's 19% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. So a post-type sleeper in the sense that he had a lot of interest last year, I think. Didn't perform up to expectations and then now has been tossed to the curb. But he's made some interesting changes lately. We're talking really small sample sizes here, but he's actually dropped his strikeout rate from about 25% in August to just 15% over the last 10 days. And he's been batting exclusively cleanup and fifth in the lineup lately. So he's got that really nice lineup spot set for him. Mike Trout might never play another game for the rest of his life with this debilitating calf injury he has. So playing time is secure.
Don't say that's just nope. This season, fine. But
who knows? Wow. Seventh in MLB in sprint speed. So there's definitely some underlying like speed there for Adell. The power peripherals, uninspiring, honestly, but he is 90th percentile in max exit velocity, which some people consider a decent benchmark for power upsides. There's definitely some potential there. He's been performing pretty well lately. Not the worst guy to take a flyer on, especially if he has made a real change to his approach. And then other than Adell, you have Jaimar Candelario over in Detroit. He's 34% rostered in Yahoo. He's also been batting primarily cleanup over the past 2 weeks, hitting 280 with a 360 WOBA over that span. The expected WOBA has hovered around 360 for the past 2 months, so this is something he's been doing for a while. And he's a guy who just hits a lot of line drives. He squares up the ball really well, 38% sweet spot. I don't think he's going to blow you away in any particular category, but he could give you a decently high floor in batting average with solid power, and he'll get plenty of counting stats, I think, hitting cleanups. He's a guy to keep an eye on. And then Brad Miller, who has been filling in for Rhys Hoskins lately, he's 11% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Decent power option. He's put up double-digit barrel rates for 4 years in a row, so this is not a surprise to see him with a 12% barrel rate this year. 50% hard hit. The guy just absolutely crushes it. And he's been pulling the ball a lot more this year, which is obviously always a good thing when you play in Philly. So I think he might be able to squeeze a little bit more out of that power going forward. Homered twice this week, and the Phillies are feasting on a couple of atrocious pitching staffs the rest of the way. They've got Colorado, the Cubs, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh all on the docket. There could be some more power coming in the next few days.
Yeah, and Brad Miller being one of the deeper options here for sure. Still rostered in 70% of main event, but only rostered in 4% of online championships. So your 12-teamers readily available and still plenty available in about 30% of those those deep 15-teamers, specifically the main event on FBC. Kevin Pillar, 4% in the online championships. Joe Adell, 77% rostered in online championships. Going to be some scattered 12-teamers out there that he is available. Of course, we always talk about how the Yahoo roster percentages always are a little bit different than your NFBC based on roster construction with 5 outfielders in the NFBC format, as opposed to your standard 3 or possibly 4 outfielders in your Yahoo leagues. And Candelario, not quite available in pretty much any NFBC format, regardless of league size, 95% rostered in online championships. But again, if you're in that, you might be in that 5% and he could help you. So just check your wire. All right, we will move on from our hitters. There's a ton of options there, guys. Hopefully you guys are taking notes and you're adding them to your watch list, adding them to your bid list, and you can maneuver your bids based on what your budget is. Add your conditional waterfall bids as well. Make sure you do fill up all your roster spots throughout the course of this week and the last couple weeks of the season. But let's talk about some pitcher options out there. There are 5 other categories in your standard leagues that we need to cover. And so let's start with our counting stats, our wins and our Ks. Kevin, I'll start with you. Who's out there that might have a 2-start week that's worth picking up, or somebody who you think just has a great matchup that can rack up a lot of Ks based on the lineup that strikes out a lot?
I'm looking at a guy with one start this week, and he hasn't been going very good recently. And so that has a little to do with his, or more than a little to do with his availability, I'm sure. But after a nice little run there, Tanner Houck started giving up some runs in recent games, but he was at New York Yankees. He was facing Tampa. He faced Cleveland twice in a row and did much better in that second outing. And then he was at the White Sox. And I know Seattle has been playing pretty well lately, but at Seattle is a nice place to pitch. So I like Tanner Houck this week. And it's all about who he's been facing, where he's been playing, and getting to go pitch in a nice ballpark finally for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I'll say Houck's a guy who's really passed the eye test. Like, I haven't really followed him super closely, but just watching like the gifts of his starts, and that slider in particular is just so nasty. It's hard to see how it couldn't click for him, at least against Seattle, like you were saying, Kevin. So I think that's definitely a risk worth taking.
Houck available in 10% of online championships on NFBC. Not readily available per se in those deeper formats. I think that if nothing else, Houck is just that guy. I talked about this either last week or the week before. There's going to be players that are held in leagues that are just being held by rosters that are just not being very active, and they're not dropping them because they're not being as active later in the season. And I venture to guess that Houck fits that bill for a lot of teams, especially in 12 teamers who probably, you know, based on what they've been seeing or what they've been producing, maybe should have dropped him for somebody else recently. I will say he's 90% rostered, but he's only being started in 49% of those leagues as well. So a lot of Houck's on the bench in a lot of different leagues. So if he is available, he's got a good matchup. This is somebody that we should take a look at. John, do you have anybody else on your list besides Houck that may be worth a flyer?
Yeah, I'll try to focus on someone that people in deeper leagues might be able to benefit from. Some guys that are probably owned in all formats, at least on NFBC, or Nestor Cortes. He's 44% rostered in Yahoo. I listed a lot of guys who had two starts coming up just because, especially in TGFBI, which is the only NFBC league that I currently play in, I found that if you're trying to make up ground in starts, strikeouts, the best way of doing that is to just continue to just soak up all these two start pitchers and try to gain ground that way, especially if you're like me and your ERA has completely tanked and you don't have to worry about that so much. So yeah, Cortes has Baltimore and Cleveland on the docket coming up. If you haven't read Zach Hayes's article on Pitcher List, I highly recommend it. It talks about how Cortes's fastball is one of the best fastballs in baseball this year. It has just a 210 xWOBA, 165 batting average against, and 145 expected batting average against. So even though it sits like 90 miles per hour, it's just like a really interesting pitch. And how Cortes is able to get away with it is he mixes up arm angles, messes with batters' timing. You know, he's actually improved his curveball this year as well. It's become more distinct from his slider, and that gives him a couple of more options to throw. And Baltimore and Cleveland are both middle of the pack against lefties by WOBA. So he's a guy, if he's available, not a bad idea to pick him up. Some of the other more owned guys, Rich Hill, 38% rostered in Yahoo. He's got St. Louis and Philly coming up. Rich Hill has actually looked pretty good lately. He imploded around the time they were cracking down on illegal substances, but he's upped his slider usage recently. And in his last three starts, he's thrown 17 innings with just 3 earned runs and 20 Ks. So he's a guy who's on a solid run right now and might be worth your time. Eric Lauer, I'm amazed that he's only rostered in 28% of leagues. He's put together a really solid season. There's a great article on FanSided by Josh Waldock about how solid Lauer has been since joining the rotation in June. He has just a 1.85 ERA over 10 starts since he joined the rotation. He's bumped his slider usage up from 2% to 17%. And it's a pitch that has 140 batting average against and a 220 slug against. So it's a really effective pitch for him. He throws a four-seam, a cutter, a slider, a change, and a curve all more than 10% of the time. So he's got a couple of different weapons he can go to. I mean, he's got Detroit and St. Louis coming up. Those are some interesting options. And then one of the more probably available pitchers is Michael Wacha. And I'll say 2020 John Metzler would be aghast that 2021 John Metzler is recommending Michael Wacha. But he has the 9th highest strikeout per walk percentage among starting pitchers over the last 30 days. That sits at 26%. He's got a 12 K per nine over that span. And the changeup is really the bread and butter pitch for him. It's still filthy. It's got a 19% swing strike rate, and he's got a 42% chase rate against it. Yeah, it's a really good pitch for him. It's been working really well for him lately in particular. And he's going to give up a ton of home runs. He has given up 21 home runs over just 100 innings pitched so far. But again, if you're looking to pick up some ground and strikeouts, I think he's an option who could, on a good day, probably give you like maybe 8 or 9 in an outing. And that's super solid. So
you talking about your 2020 self being upset about you recommending Wacha sounds a lot like Kevin at the beginning of this season talking about Wade Miley. And that worked out great. That worked out great this season. I think we can trust it. I think we can go with it. Yeah, Michael Wacha available in 93% of online championships and 23% of main events. So readily available in a lot of those formats as well. In addition to Eric Lauer is available in 79% of online championships as well in those 12 teamers. Take a look at your wire. Check to see if any of these names are out there. There's a lot of good options here for some strikeouts. And of course, as John said, you just want to rack up as many innings as you possibly can if you're specifically looking at strikeouts. Wins are a different story. You can get wins from a whole different can of worms, depending on what you can put on your roster. But the only way you're going to get strikeouts really is the more innings, the more volume you're going to be able to get. So those two-star options are definitely going to be targets. So let's look a little bit ahead and look at those two-star options for the week of for the second-to-last week of the season. And I've got a couple of names. I got a decent-sized list here. And, of course, this list is subject to change. We are looking a little bit further into the future than most teams are, and they're not set in stone by any stretch of the imagination. But I want you guys to look over the list. Give me a name that you like based on their matchups, based on who they are and what they bring to the table. And then give me a name that you think the field or the other teams in your leagues might be eyeing that you'd be completely out on. Kevin, I'll start with you.
It would be really easy to look at this list and see matchups versus the Angels at Detroit and at Cleveland and the name Dallas Keuchel and think, ooh, if he's available, I want him. But no, you don't. This is the runs he's given up in recent appearances. 5, 6, 6, 6. That 1-6 was against the Cubs in one inning pitched. 4, 5, 4. He's been getting rocked in 6 of the last 8 outings. Just not touching him right now. And conversely, a guy that has been giving up a few more runs than he had for a little bit. He was on a nice little run and people were starting to talk about him. And that's Vladimir Gutierrez, the Cincinnati Reds. But his matchups, he gets 2 versus Pittsburgh and 1 against the Nationals. This I like. He's bounced back after those couple rough outings that I referenced, where he only went about 3 innings in each outing. But he had been going at least 6 1/3 innings for 7 straight appearances, never giving up more than 2 runs. And then he had a couple of rough outings, 3 innings apiece, against the Marlins and Tigers of all teams, but he bounced back most recently versus the Cubs. They're the cure now for a pitcher going badly, unless you're Dallas Keuchel. One earned run, a solo home run, 6 strikeouts in 5 innings. Yeah, I like him with the matchups for that 2-start week if it does come to pass, and avoiding Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, and you should be checking out Nick Pollock's rest of season schedule breakdown over at pitcherlist.com, of course, to see all the pitchers and all their matchups they have, at least as they are laid out right now. I know he'll update that as the season moves on. John, from this list, who do you like and who are you fading?
Yeah, I think Tony Gonsolin. He's got Arizona and then Colorado and then Arizona again on the docket. I think the Tony Gonsolin from 2020 is probably still fresh in people's minds. And a pitcher on the Dodgers, you figure you're probably going to get some easy wins, especially against opponents like that. But you got Colorado in Colorado, and Gonsolin, I just don't think is stretched out enough where he's going to give you the length that you need to get a ton of value there. And then on top of that, he just has not been a very solid pitcher this year. His control has been a huge issue. Generally a little skittish about investing in pitchers who have struggled with injuries throughout the year, because it's just not totally clear if they're going to be able to get back into that groove. Despite what appears like a super attractive pickup there, I think I'm fading Gonsolin. And then Joe Ryan, I talked about loving old men, but I'm also a hype bay at the end of the day. And Joe Ryan, if you look at his minor league K per nine numbers, they're insane. In 2021 with the Rays AAA system, he had an 11 K per nine over 57 innings. So this is a guy who can just rack up a ton of strikeouts. He had a pretty solid first couple outings, especially the K's haven't been there yet, but I'm willing to roll the dice on that, especially given that he has Cleveland and then the Cubs coming up. Toronto after that, maybe consider avoiding if you're in a daily matchups league. But yeah, he's a guy who I might be interested in just rolling the dice on and seeing if he can capture that magic he had in the minors.
Yeah, of course, like I said at the start of this, a lot of this is subject to change, whether it be via injury or teams lining themselves up for playoffs or teams being completely out of it and wanting to take a look at somebody new in their lineups. I think with all the injuries that Minnesota has seen, I think Joe Ryan's probably safe in his rotation spot for the rest of the way. But there's going to be a couple other guys that get pushed back, even just a day, if not skipped altogether. So keep an eye out for that, and definitely want to look at who they have for their first matchup before you take a look at what their potential double start matchup would be. All right, we move on from our volume plays into our ratio guys that could chip away at ERA and WHIP. Of course, we usually say that these are going to be long relievers, but there's some starters out there that just maybe you're not in the market for a win or K, but you think that they can have a lot of control and they can cut down on those ratios for you. So John, I will start with you. Is there anybody out there that kind of fits the bill for you here when maybe you're not in a situation like you are where you actually have a chance in your ERA and WHIP categories?
Yeah, this is such a something I can't relate to, actually having a chance of improving my ERA or WHIP. But
they can always come back down to you. There are teams. This is the one area that's in batting average and OBP. The ratios can come back to you. You don't have to always catch up.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for a couple of nine earned run outings for my opponents down the stretch so I can really pull within striking distance. Yeah, I think Garrett Richards, I think I mentioned him at the outset. He's been an interesting guy for the Red Sox. We talked about how, especially on bullpen days, he's a guy who they might turn to soak up a couple innings. And since he went to the pen for Boston, he's had a 1.13 ERA with 20 strikeouts and 16 innings. So he's looked really good as a reliever. I think he could soak up a decent amount of innings and give you an effective outing. And if he comes in towards the middle of the bullpen day, there's a pretty good shot he could soak up a win for you there too, which is a nice cherry on top. Richards is a guy I would keep an eye on, especially because I really don't know what the closer situation is there in Boston. They had Ottavio filling in for a while, but he has been imploding lately and been used earlier in games. So there's an outside chance a guy like Richards or even Garrett Whitlock could be moved into that role. So those are options where I think they could give you some decent ratios and you might also get the benefit of a couple saves.
All right, Kevin, anybody else that can chip away at your ratios that you're looking at?
Not necessarily chip away, but as you said, people can come back to you in these categories, and we want to make sure we're not the ones falling back. So we can also just try to protect our ratios a little bit. The reason I say that is Kendall Graveman is not getting multi-inning appearances. Two of his 15 appearances since going to the Astros have been for more than one inning, and they were just a four and a five out appearance. But other than the one pitch he threw to Abraham Toro, that if you wrote that in a script, people would throw it in the trash, say, this is too unbelievable. That's not going to happen after that trade that went down. Yeah, he's been amazing as an Astro in 15 appearances with a strikeout in at least nearly every appearance. He doesn't have a save yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if he got one at some point, just if Presley had been used a couple days in a row. So I have no problem throwing Graveman in my lineup to help protect my ratios. rather than a sixth or seventh starter that whose matchup really scares me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like you gotta play defense just as much as you gotta play offense at this stage of the game. All right, let's move on to everybody's favorite category, and that is the saves category. Kevin, I will start with you here. Is there any situation out there right now worth putting your feet in the water to see if you can scrounge up a save with the final week or two of the season?
Well, for the last several weeks, I've just said, no, I don't really want any of these guys. And I apologize to John. It's one of the guys he's got listed here again, but he does have several. So I think it's okay.
You can have him. It's okay.
After avoiding this situation for weeks, I think Hector Neris is the guy I want in Philadelphia. He's striking out a ton of guys and not walking anybody. I will let John give you those exact stats. He's got those in the notes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But most importantly, I think he's got the opportunity here because Ian Kennedy has not been good.
Yeah, I'm actually happy to have you be the one to stake a claim to Hector Neris, because if he explodes down the stretch, it's not. It wasn't me. It was Kevin. Yeah, no, but he's looked amazing recently. Like the last 30 days, he has the best strikeout per walk percentage in baseball at 40%. This is like absurd. He has the eighth lowest FIP at 1.5 over the last 30 days, 16 K per nine over that span. He's just looked absolutely filthy. And to Kevin's point, Ian Kennedy has just looked awful since he got to the Phillies. He has a 6.59 ERA. The Phillies are still fighting for a wild card spot to try to get into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be messing around with Kennedy all that much longer. And considering how well Neris has pitched and the fact that I don't think they really have any alternative options there, I would not be surprised to see them make that switch really soon.
All right. Who else on your list, John, did Kevin not take, and who's worth talking about?
Yeah, so Andrew Chafin over in Oakland, he picked up the team's most recent save op. He came in today, I think, in a pretty tight situation. It wasn't a save situation, but they were leading by a run. I think he actually gave up a home run, so that probably hurts his case. He's pitched to a 1.64 ERA. He's got solid peripherals, generates a ton of grounders, 48% there. He's only given up 3 home runs all year. Lou Trevino, who I think is the presumptive closer in Oakland, has a 7.79 ERA since the break. I would say the only real knock against Chafin is he's a lefty, but I think they could probably use Jake Dykeman to fill that lefty specialist role. So I don't think that hurts his case too much. And that's actually something I picked up from Saris. Like generally, when you're looking to scout for closers, lefties have a tougher time kind of getting into that role, but it definitely helps that they have another option there. So I think they are going to probably start leaning on Chafin a little bit more, just considering how badly everybody else has struggled. So he's not a bad option to invest in. I mentioned Garrett Whitlock and Garrett Richards. And those are both multi-inning guys that I think with Barnes on the IL and Ottavino struggling, I think there's a chance that either of them really could probably step into that role and probably pick up a couple saves down the stretch. And then a long shot, Tyler Wells on Baltimore. He's got a really nice fastball slider combo. Both pitches have actually racked up a 6 P-Val this year. They've returned really good results. And the Orioles might win 3 more games the rest of the season, and maybe one of them will be a save op, but there's a chance maybe Tyler Wells gets that one save op. Seems like he's splitting the role right now with Cole Solskjaer. So yeah, I think he's a very deep league option, but if you're desperate and it's one save could be the difference, not a bad guy to consider.
Yeah, it looked really good. So at the very least, he wouldn't hurt you by having him in your lineup. So at the very least, even if you're desperate for saves, he doesn't give you any, he's probably going to fit more into that Kendall Graveman role that Kevin was just mentioning to protect those ratios, at least based on what he's been doing recently. All right, we'll be done with that. We're done talking about that. Nobody wants to hear anything more about saves for the remainder of the season. That was a recording from about 4 months ago.
Got it all out of the way early.
Actually, Adam, I have a question that I was pondering this week. I think this season, more than any other, has really shown us the value of drafting your saves. And we talked about it early in the year a lot. We both made that move that we hadn't been as comfortable with before. Hmm. And in the instances where the guys we did draft earlier stayed healthy, it worked out well. I think that's the case with a lot of people. How high are these guys going next year in drafts? I think I saw Phil Dassault took Josh Hader in the third round of one of his main event teams. These guys are probably going second round next year, no? A couple of them anyway.
I think we talked about this early in the season. I totally see this being going the way the relievers or closers specifically going the same way as catchers did. When you start seeing catchers like that top tier high end catchers, like at one point, Gary Sanchez and Realmuto and what have you, going in sometimes stretching all the way to the second round. Usually that first catcher goes in like a third round and two or three of them go between rounds 2 and 5, but then there's a huge drop off. And I could totally see that being the case next year in those drafts where you see the ones that you know are going to be completely solid going super early. And then they're being just like everybody just being totally scared off.
Like somebody getting their guy that has first overall pick, hitting them at the 2-3 turn.
At the 2-3 turn. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just riding that and crossing your fingers that they don't have a terrible season or get hurt right away like the Rosenthal happened this year in many drafts. But yeah, I totally see that being a viable strategy for next year's drafts. And with the moves that you can make and the hits that you can get later on in drafts, you can get that with closers, but it's a lot harder now to get the Alex Reyes before he started breaking down. You saw that this year. It's going to continuously be that much harder to get those moving forward because they're just not going to exist.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the comp to catchers is spot on. It's kind of like people are paying premiums for those top guys that they know they can depend on, and then just waiting and just scraping the bottom of the barrel after that. I've never been a guy who wanted to pay for saves. I've always found that you can get those values in the later ends of drafts, and as the season goes on, pick up guys that you're speculating on. One of the benefits, I think, of spending money on a closer is that you can lock down those really solid ratios that you're almost definitely not going to get if you're somebody who waits on saves. So,
yeah, and this is completely different in a head-to-head league where you can still not pay for a top-tier closer. You can either punt the category altogether or come playoff time, if you're in that hunt, you can, after trade deadline, you can just scout your waiver wire and wait for those trades to happen. And if you're in a fast finger league, you can just go ahead and, you know, grab, you know, the Rowan Wicks of the world that they're going to move into that role once the Kimbrels get traded away.
Yeah. Or pick up Nick Anderson and stash.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. That'll definitely pay 4 months. Yeah. And hope for the best.
Yeah.
All right. Then I think this whole situation is a big wild card, so that's a nice little segue that I forced in there into our wild card section here. Let's end it all with one last recommendation you guys have that doesn't really fit into any one category that we've talked about. Kevin, I'll start with you. May it be a prospect like a Connor Siebold who just got called up, or that you think is worth stashing for the last couple of weeks, or just a random player, like I mentioned Jose Siri, I think 2 weeks ago, that obviously hasn't panned out, but that's why it's in the wild card section. X, Y, and Z happens. This player could make a difference in the last couple of weeks, but they all have to probably happen. Who are you looking at for that kind of fits that bill?
Yeah, it's the whole wild card opportunity window is closing very quickly, right? Sure. Anything speculative. We only have 3 weeks to go. And a guy I have my eye on, but if I'm going to pull the trigger, I really need to pull the trigger this weekend, I think. And that's AJ Alexi in Texas. He's only had 2 starts, but they've been impressive. A total of 11 innings pitched. He got Rocky Road and at the Angels, whose lineup isn't striking fear into anyone right now. And he's going to pitch on Monday versus the Astros. I really don't like that. The way it's lined up right now, it looks like Roster Resource has the Rangers using 7 different starting pitchers this week. And then him lining up the following Monday again at New York. Now that lineup, New York Yankees. Some days they're great, other days they're abysmal. So 2 starts in a row where I don't think I want to use him. But if he pitches well versus the Astros, then that's 3 great starts going into next weekend's Fab. Same with that, the start the following week with the at the Yankees. And maybe something's got to happen with one of these seven guys. You would think maybe there's a two-start week, or we're only looking at his final start of the season. And I'm talking about picking up a guy right now. So you have to have a free spot. That's why I didn't use him earlier in any of our pitching categories. And we get to see another start or two versus good teams to see if it goes as well as it has so far for him. But it's definitely somebody I'm keeping an eye on. And if I have a spot, we talk about doing something with your spots each and every week. If I have a guy I know I'm not going to use the rest of the way, and I don't know what I'm going to do with that spot, he's somebody I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's exactly what we always talk about. Like, use your roster spots to the best of your ability. Even if you're picking up a guy that you know you're not going to start right away, somebody that you don't have to wait till next week to get that fab option. So that's why we do that section on future two-star pitchers. Let's just get ahead of the game. John, what is your wild card option going into next week?
I'm still keeping a candle lit for Vidal Brujan. I'm hoping that the Rays come to their senses and realize people don't want to watch the Rays win games. They want to watch exciting baseball, and they want good things to happen to their fantasy teams. So I'm still hoping. Taylor Walls, he's a solid player. I think he's probably more suited to be a defensive replacement for them. And I'm hoping they take a look and see what they've got with Brujan, just because all year we've been debating, like, oh, who's going to get to the majors first, Wander or Brujan? So it always seemed like one of the two of them was going to take a starting job and run with it. And I think it would be interesting. He has a speed element that I think the team could probably use in the playoffs. So it might be a cool opportunity for them to see what they've gotten him and maybe help out some fantasy teams in the process. So yeah, fingers crossed.
That brings up a question similar to my question I had last week. I probably should just look it up on my own, but I'll ask you guys. I was under the impression that rosters had to be set for anybody not on a roster by September 1st wasn't eligible to play in the playoffs. Now, with rosters not expanding the way they used to, is that not the case any longer? Or is that Brujan would still be available to be on the Tampa Bay playoff roster, even though he's been in the minors all month?
That's a good question, actually. I honestly do not know. Maybe everything I just said is completely invalidated and there's no chance of him pitching in the playoffs. But even if that's the case, there's still a chance to make us fantasy players happy. So hopefully that's enough motivation in and of itself for the Rays to make the move.
No, it's Brujan would be able to be used. You have to be on the 40-man roster.
Okay.
On August 31st. And then you're eligible for the postseason. So what we've heard about in recent days and weeks about this is some of the older veterans that hadn't been performing for teams were being dropped so other teams could pick them up that may have postseason aspirations. If they weren't picked up and added to 40-man rosters by August 31st, they're not eligible for the postseason.
There you go. And as you were talking, of course, I did the very simple thing of Googling that. And of course, it's the first thing that popped up. Could have saved us all a lot of time. All right. Thanks, guys. All right. I think that is probably going to do it for us. We talked about a lot of different players throughout the pod. If there is a player that you're thinking about bidding on in the future and you want us to discuss them, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. You can shoot us a DM on Twitter at onthewirepod. Of course, you can get a hold of all of us through the PL Discord over at plplus@pitcherlist.com. Get access to the Discord and the advice and banter of all its members and the Pitcherlist staff who are just here waiting to help you win your league in the last couple of weeks of the season. I'm going to again thank John Metzeler for joining us on this episode. John, could you remind everyone at home or in their car, wherever they're listening to this, how they can follow you and what you're continuously working on and what you might be working on into the offseason that they should be keeping a lookout for?
Yeah, so I'm at John Metzeler on Twitter, spelled exactly like it sounds. And then, as mentioned in the earlier part of the podcast, I work on Hitter List. That's actually wrapped up now for the year, but I will be putting together that early 2022 hitter rankings list in the next few weeks, so you can keep an eye out for that. We're also going to be doing a pun bracket based on the Batter's Box articles that Adam actually contributes to.
Had a couple in there. I was pretty happy. I got 3 or 4 in there. I was pretty pumped.
Yeah.
32.
So Adam's Twitter handle is 80 grade, and that refers to his pun talent. So he has 80 grade pun talent. And you're going to want to keep an eye out for that bracket if you get a chance to you're going to want to weigh in. It's baseballs, it's puns. There's nothing not to like. And that should be coming out in the next couple of days, actually. So keep an eye out.
Nice. Yeah, there are plenty of puns to go around on pitcherlist.com for sure. But the batter's box one is probably the most consistent daily article. Besides, obviously, Nick's SP Roundup that obviously has his own pot of gold in there each week. But this is collaborative. Batter's Box is like 6 different guys working every other day coming up with a different one all on their own. So that's 6 brains coming up with all these hive beautiful, mind. Beautiful. Yeah, exactly. We all feed off of each other. All right. Like I said, that's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. It's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hasting Kevin, and make sure to follow at Pitcher List Pods to get updates on every new episode of all the Pitcher List Podcast Network shows. Give them all a listen throughout the month of September and into the off season. We wish you the best of luck of all your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to John Meslar for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hasting, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.